Imagine metal, but caught right in the middle of a just a violent continuous explosion, an environment so hostile that the material's very structure is being, peeled away atom by atom.
Right.
We are talking about the inside of a high-performance military gun barrel.
It's one of the most demanding engineering environments, well, anywhere on Earth, really.
Yeah.
With every single shot, that inner surface is instantly battered by pressures that can go over 700 megapascals.
Wow.
For context, that's like balancing, I don't know, almost 102,000 pounds on one single square inch.
Yeah.
And the temperature spike,
Yeah.
it just shoots up to 3,700 Kelvin.
3,700 Kelvin. That's hotter than the melting point of virtually every material we know. Certainly hotter than the sun's
Oh,
surface.
absolutely.
So conventional high-strength steels, as tough as they are, they just can't take that kind of continuous shock and erosion. They degrade and fast.
Precisely. They're built for strength, sure, but not for that specific mix of extreme heat, pressure, and the chemical reactions from the hot propellant gases.
So the real challenge, the need, is to create an inner surface that is fundamentally different, something far more resilient than the bulk steel itself.
And that is exactly what brings us to our source material for this deep dive. It's an incredible piece of work from 1983,
Right.
a PhD dissertation from Cambridge titled Unconventional Surface Treatments for High-Strength Steels by Kankanij Jagath Anandamawala.
And this research, it tackles the problem head on. It's not just about a simple coating. It's about redefining the structure of the surface itself. The core idea is something called rapid quenching.
It involves melting a very thin layer of the steel and then cooling it down so fast at blistering rates of 10,000 Kelvin per second or even higher
Wow.
that the microstructure just locks into place. It forms a non-equilibrium state, creating these new, super hard phases that you could never get with traditional methods.
So our mission today is to unpack the really complex material science behind these ultra-fast cooling techniques. We'll get into the electron beam tech they used and uncover the just frankly shocking changes they achieved 40 years ago.
And you'll see that speed isn't just about making things faster. It's a way to unlock entirely new material properties.
Okay, so let's start with the physics of this process. When you say rapid quenching, we're literally forcing atoms to what skip steps they'd normally take.
That's a perfect way to put it. You're suppressing their, let's call it, their natural instinct to settle into the most stable equilibrium crystal structure.
And that speed, that 10,000 Kelvin per second minimum, that's the magic number.
That's the key. If you cool any slower, the material had time for atoms to diffuse around, and that allows weaker, softer phases to form. Ultrafast cooling just freezes everything in place. You retain properties in the liquid phase or create phases that are highly supersaturated.
And the specific tool this thesis focuses on is electron beam rapid quenching, or EBRQ. This is an in-situ process, so they're melting and instantly solidifying the steel surface right there on the spot. So why the electron beam? Why was that the chosen weapon for this war on wear?
It really just boiled down to one crucial engineering factor, efficiency.
Okay.
Back in the early 1980s, the efficiency gap between electron beams and lasers, the
Yeah.
other big beam technology,
Sure.
it was monumental.
Break down those numbers for us because I looked at them and they are staggering.
The research cites that the electron beams were getting an energy transfer efficiency into the metal of about 55%.
55. That's excellent.
It is. Now, contrast that with the lasers of that era, which only managed about 5.5%.
So the electron beam was literally 10 times more efficient.
10 times.
It's like a highly focused sniper rifle of thermal energy, where the lasers back then were more like a shotgun, losing most of their power to reflections. So why is that 10 times difference so critical here?
It translates directly into control and power. Higher efficiency means you can maximize your melt depth, how deep the new layer goes, and at the same time, you maximize the thermal gradient, which is what dictates the cooling rate.
Ah, I
You
see.
need massive focused power to melt the surface, and then you need massive thermal conductivity from the cold substrate below it to pull that heat away at those insane rates. The electron beam could deliver that.
And the equipment itself, it sounds like a beast. A CVE-60 electron beam welder operating in a high vacuum below 10 to the minus 4 torr. I
Absolutely.
mean, just getting and keeping that deep vacuum must have been a huge
A
challenge.
huge engineering hurdle. That high vacuum is non-negotiable because electrons need a clear path. Any air, any moisture, and it just scatters the beam.
Of course.
It adds complexity, it adds cost, but it ensures the beam is pure and focused. And they were flying that beam across the surface at really impressive speeds, up to 36.4 centimeters per second.
And that speed, combined with the focus, is what lets the heat get immediately sucked away by the huge cold block of steel underneath. That's the quench.
That is the quench. Now, while the main goal was improving the steel, one major scientific objective they also explored was producing the sort of the ultimate surface material, an amorphous layer, what we call a metallic glass.
Metallic glass, the structure with no grain boundaries. Why is that the gold standard for wear resistance?
Because you've completely eliminated the weakest links in the chain. In conventional metals, grain boundaries are where corrosion starts, where fractures begin.
Right.
A metallic glass, because it solidifies without forming any crystals, has none of that. It's just exceptionally strong and hard.
But making that perfect glass state, that requires even faster cooling, doesn't it? We're talking way beyond that 10,000 Kelvin per second mark.
Oh, yeah. For many alloys, you need quenching rates over 1,000,000 degrees Celsius per second.
A million.
A million. Just to make sure the atoms don't have enough time to, you know, line up into crystals.
And to test this, the dissertation mentions they cladded an FPC alloy powder onto the steel. Fe80 P13 C7.
That iron-phosphorus carbon blend was chosen for one reason. It has a really high glass-forming tendency. It was one of the early model systems that was known to need, well, relatively lower cooling rates, which made it a perfect candidate to see if their electron beam setup was up to the challenge.
Okay, so we've got the physics, we've got the tools. Let's move to the payoff, the microstructural transformation itself. The researchers actually used Rosenthal's moving point source model to map out their experiments, theory as a roadmap.
And that's a crucial point. Rosenthal's model let them predict with pretty good accuracy the melt depth and cooling rates based on their power and their speed. It confirmed they were operating in the right zone to create these non-equilibrium structures.
And the steel they started with was already impressive stuff. It was an ultra-high-strength steel from RARDI, the Royal Armament Research and Development Establishment.
So it already had a tempered martensitic microstructure.
Right. But the electron beam process just fundamentally rewrote it. What was the first most visible change?
The change in scale. The first aha moment was just the sheer level of extreme grain refinement. The original steel had prior austenite grains around, say, 75 micrometers. The rapidly quenched surface was orders of magnitude finer than that.
And for anyone listening, why does making the internal structure smaller make the steel stronger?
It's the Hall-Petch relationship in action. Grain boundaries essentially act as little walls that block dislocation motion, and that's how metals deform.
Okay.
So if you shrink the grain size, you massively increase the number of walls. Dislocations can't travel as far before they hit one, and that dramatically increases the strength and hardness of the material.
Got it. So extreme refinement is mechanism number one. But the second change is, I think, where the science gets really radical. It's a fundamental shift in how the crystal structure itself handles stress. Let's unpack the formation of twin martensite plates.
This is truly fascinating stuff. The quenched zone was still martensite, which is already a very hard non-equilibrium phase. But the ultra-fast cooling rate promoted the formation of these tiny, internally twinned martensite plates.
And how tiny are we talking?
Widths often between just 20 and 150 nanometers.
We normally think of martensite deforming by slip, right? Where layers of atoms just slide past each other. What is twinning, and why does the cooling speed suddenly favor it?
Twinning is different. Instead of sliding, a part of the crystal lattice deforms by creating a mirror image of itself across a boundary plane. Think of it like folding a deck of cards over on itself instead of just sliding the cards across the table.
And the trigger for that switch is the temperature, the speed of the drop.
Exactly. High quenching rates dramatically lower the ML's temperature. That's the temperature where the martensite transformation starts.
Okay.
And when that M's drops, there's less thermal energy available. And critically, this also lowers the stress required for slip to happen. Or rather, it makes the stress required for twinning relatively lower.
So because the steel is transforming at a much colder temperature, the energy barrier to do the normal sliding thing slip becomes much higher compared to the energy needed for this mirror image thing twinning.
You've got it. Twinning becomes the path of least resistance at these extremely low transformation temperatures. It's just this elegant proof that by messing with the processing kinetics, you can literally redefine the fundamental deformation mechanism of the steel.
Incredible. So we have tiny grains and a tougher deformation mechanism. What was the third big microstructural win?
It's really two related things.
Yeah.
An increase in retained austenite and enhanced solid solubility. rapid quenching traps way more alloying elements inside the steel lattice than should be there.
More than is stable.
Far more. And this leads to a lot more retained austenite, which they saw as these thin films between the martensite laths.
Why does trapping those elements in place matter so much?
Because it prevents something called auto-tempering. This is a natural process where, during cooling, stabilizing carbides precipitate out of the matrix, and that can actually soften the steel a bit. By locking everything in solution so quickly, the electron beam process just completely suppresses the formation of these carbides. What you're left with is a highly supersaturated non-equilibrium phase that is just inherently much, much harder.
Hmm.
So you combine that grain refinement, the twin martensite, the supersaturation. We have to look at the payoff, right? How did all these atomic changes translate into real-world strength?
And the micro-hardness data here is, well, it's really compelling. They nearly doubled the hardness of the surface layer.
The high-strength steel they started with was around 350 VPN. That's the Vickers pyramid number.
Which is already strong steel.
It's very strong.
Yeah.
But the rapidly quenched surface layer was consistently hitting 810 to 820 VPN. Doubling the surface hardness is a massive engineering win. It directly addresses the wear problem.
Right, which immediately suggests you're going to get much better wear resistance. But how did they test that? How do you simulate the extreme gun bore environment?
The specialized testing for that was done at RRD using a bespoke vented chamber erosion system. This device was designed specifically to simulate that high-pressure, hot gas environment inside a gun. They were basically recreating the violence of a gunshot.
And did the high-speed microstructure live up to its promise under those conditions?
It did. The data confirmed it. The rapidly quenched sample showed a quantifiable and significant reduction in mass loss and erosion when you compare them to the untreated samples.
So it solidifies the core finding.
Yeah.
Electron beam rapid quenching works for creating these ultra hard, resilient surfaces.
Absolutely.
But as is so often the case in engineering, there was a major unavoidable trade-off they found. Surface roughness. What was going on there?
The extreme thermal gradients that you need for the quench, especially when they cranked up the power, caused these significant surface tension gradients in the little molten pool.
Okay.
So think of the liquid metal being pulled differently across the melt zone. And what that resulted in was the formation of ripples or waves, an uneven corrugated surface.
So even though the material underneath was superior, the rough topography on the outside created a new physical vulnerability.
Exactly. The researchers found this was a critical detrimental factor. In a high-velocity, high-pressure gas flow like in a gun barrel, a rough surface can increase turbulence, which actually accelerates erosion.
And I imagine it creates sites for cracks or corrosion to start, too.
You're right. It fundamentally undermines some of the material gain.
So wrapping this up, what does this 1983 deep dive really teach us today? What are the key takeaways from this pioneering work?
Well, the primary insight is that these unconventional surface treatments using high-intensity energy sources like an electron beam, they offer a revolutionary way to enhance high-strength steels. We learned that you can get superior hardness and wear resistance not by changing the bulk chemistry, but by manipulating its cooling kinetics at the atomic level.
And the research really flagged that the future of this whole technique hinged on refining process control. They needed to find that sweet spot for power and speed to get rid of that detrimental surface roughness to really maximize the benefit.
And that control is still a key challenge in all high-energy beam processing today. But for me, the most profound, the most provocative thought this research leaves us with is that physical confirmation, the proof that ultra-fast cooling can fundamentally alter how a material behaves.
Switching it from slip to twinning.
Exactly. Switching the deformation mechanism in martensite from the familiar slip to the much more complex and durable twinning. And it really forces you to ask, what other conventional, well-understood materials out there might be hiding these radical high-performance properties just waiting for an extreme non-equilibrium process to come along and reveal their true ultra-resilient potential?